We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Wake up! Wake up! Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
Did you watch any of the Masters yesterday?
A little bit.
Yeah, me too.
I'm not diminishing it, I guess, a little bit.
You're totally
scoffing a little bit.
Sounds like you're saying golf's not a sport, David.
That's what. Yeah, you got.
Is golf not a sport?
No.
Because
no.
And it kind of sounds like you're saying golf's not a sport.
I do have this philosophy sometimes, and I do enjoy golf at times watching it. I'm not the biggest fan, as you know. I used to have this rule that if you can drink a beer while doing it, it's not a sport.
Hey, who wants to play drink the beer?
Right here.
You win.
All right. What do I win?
Another beer.
Oh, I'm going for the high score.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Good morning, guys. If I've never said this before, I'm going to say it now. Thank you both, because I start work at 5:30 in the morning, fire up the semi, take a sip of coffee, and you guys are always there to entertain me throughout my morning.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, the remix. Dave Ramirez, Marshall Harris from CBS2, hanging out today all the way till 10 o'clock. And, you know, you and I both out of town this past weekend, but, you know, some grinders back at it again, 5:30 in the morning.
Now, I was out of town for like 4 days, but I was here yesterday, watched a whole lot of sports in a very short period of time, worked till 11:30. Probably should have worked a couple minutes later. We can get into that later.
What time did you go to bed at?
I went to bed at probably 12:15.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, that's a quick turnaround from getting off the air and then going to sleep.
And then I woke up at 4. I was tired, bro.
That's what I'm saying. I feel like when I get off work that late, I cannot like wind the body down.
So my flight this morning or yesterday morning to get back to Chicago was at 7:10. So I was up at 5:30 in the morning just to go to the airport. And yeah, so like it was just a long day.
Yeah. My wife caught a stomach bug, and I was in Mexico over the weekend, caught a stomach bug. So I was essentially traveling solo with two children under 4 years old, you know, catching flights, luggages, two big-ass luggages, two kids, and my wife's looking at me, and she's like, I can't even help you. So
She's dead weight at this point.
And then so the three of them are in one row together, and so I'm trying to, like, give them snacks and blankets from, like, the complete opposite row, like, trying to... It was quite the day yesterday, my friend. But fortunately, I still got to watch some Bulls basketball.
Is that fortunate?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, so you're on the Billy Bulls, Donovan, let's play everybody 1,000 minutes.
The Bulls are one of the most exciting teams in the NBA.
Because they played more overtime games than anyone else? Because they have more, quote-unquote, clutch games than anyone else?
Yes, that's exactly why it is. And it doesn't matter if it's against the best teams in the NBA or against the worst teams in the NBA. You don't know what is going to happen. Who doesn't like edge of your seat, thrilling NBA TV like
was,
that?
Was Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde like your favorite novel growing up that you used
to
read?
No,
because that's what it sounds like when you say stuff like that.
I think those guys are very consistent.
Consistently inconsistent?
Yes, that's my point. Bulls come out and face a lowly Knicks team.
They is that beat lowly?
Them, beat them the first time. In this three-game stretch, they just had beat them the first time. Then the second one, they really didn't care. They were a little bit more hurt. And this last one, they come on, they're like, yeah, we're about that business. My friends from New York were texting me, gloating, and I am trying to explain.
Gloating about the beating the Bulls?
And literally, I'm getting, just like you texted me yesterday, I'm getting big eye emojis looking, and I'm like, why are you sending me this? Why are you gloating about beating the Bulls? The Bulls didn't even have half their roster yesterday.
Can I just say, playing a non-division opponent three times in the final six games is insane.
So stupid.
That doesn't make any sense to me. I looked at the schedule when it happened. I was like, wait, why are they playing the Knicks three times in six games to end the season?
Almost like Adam Silver's trying to figure out like what two teams are going to be battling it out for the play-in situation. Should be the Knicks. And the
Bulls. You know what? That's actually a pretty good theory because I don't think anyone expected to beat the Knicks to be the two seed in the East.
At all.
So that actually tracks. I think the big thing for me is you watch the Bulls, and just like you said, you never know what you're going to get, and it's exciting. Did Michael Reinsdorf pay you to say that?
No.
Are you on Arturas' payroll? Are you a consultant for the Bulls front office?
Marshall, you know I watch every Bulls game religiously. And so for me, watching these games, and I know most people don't. So my thing is this, though. It's not like I'm watching a team. It's because I watch a lot of games on DVR, like an hour after the game, hour and a half after the game. It's not like I'm watching a game that I then have to turn off halfway through it because, like the White Sox, where they're down 5-0, you know there's no chance they're going to score another run, and you just shut it off because you're like, this is terrible to watch. At least the Bulls keep it interesting till the fourth and then lose. Keep it interesting to the fourth and maybe send it to overtime and win. Like, they're very exciting games. And so yeah, I know that nobody else feels that way because they look at the record and they don't watch the games. So I am here as a vessel to let people know the Bulls are still excited.
You watched the end of the fourth quarter?
Yeah.
Okay, so.
Bulls were up, unfortunately, you know.
You knew what it was going to be with DeMar, right? Are you okay with that? Because I'm kind of tired of seeing that. This isn't 2 years ago where it's like DeMar ISO and that's the game.
I mean, that's what makes it exciting, where you are not necessarily sure what's going to happen with DeMar. Is he going to go 8 for 9 and go crazy in the fourth quarter? Is he going to go, you know, or is he going to go 6 for 8 and then miss the last second shot at the, you know, in crunch time with a minute left? Or is Vooch going to force a 3 when he shouldn't because he's trying to be the man?
That was an air ball, wasn't it?
Is Alex Caruso going to get the extra swing pass from Coby White where Coby should have shot it? And then Alex Caruso's like, oh, damn, I know I'm hot, but I wasn't expecting this. Oh, then you get his true shooting percentage. Again, just things you don't know.
You know what's crazy about Alex Caruso? The numbers bear out that he's having his best season from three, and he's one of their best three-point shooters, especially so in sad. The clutch. But the eyeball test, every time he shoots that three, you're like, is that the shot you want? Is that the shot you want?
I mean, but he pulls
it
off.
And I love Alex Caruso.
Love him. Glad that he was in yesterday. Of course, the Bulls are going to be taking on the Atlanta Hawks. You can hear that right here on 670 The Score, the only local broadcast. Tip-off begins at 8:30. Pregame begins at 8:15. I'm sure I'll have you leading up to that game that night.
That game's so late. Why? The fact that they have to play.
It's in Atlanta, so that means that game's at 9:30 over there.
It's at United Center. It's their first ever home play-in game. That's what we're celebrating this year.
Hey, it's because the Bulls are either so good or so bad. Exciting, as I mentioned, some other exciting stuff over the weekend. I know you were talking a lot about the Cubbies and how well they did over the weekend as well.
Yeah, so like, you know, they dropped a 2 out of 3 to start off the 9-game road trip. 9 games, 10 days, hitting up the Dodgers, hitting up Seattle over the weekend, and now headed to Arizona to face the reigning NL champs. I was just interested to see, like, how are you going to fare against this really top-level competition? I know it's early, but still, you know, it's a good barometer. You're on the road, you're away from home, and Michael Bush looks like that dude.
Hey.
And Shota Imanaga looks like that dude. And the Cubs might have some dudes.
It's interesting to see the Cubs be the team that, and you know, you watch it, right? When you watch sports, regardless of the sport, there's a team that always like finds that way to win, or just seems to, where you're watching the game and you just think to yourself, yeah, I'm not really worried about this deficit, or they're going to hold on, or the pitcher's going to get out of this jam. Like, and I feel like the Cubs are in that space right now. You know, even though they're 9-6, you know, when you're looking at the weekend series, other teams, whereas before they might have said, hey, the Cubs are in town, we're going to have to battle them out. Now it's like, damn, the Cubs are in town. They're playing well.
That's a good feeling to have.
Especially after this road trip. I mean, they're playing some good teams at the start of the season.
I'm never surprised per se, but then when you see it, you're always like, dang, there's a lot of Cubs fans a lot of places because they fill up these ballparks on the road. And that was their first road series win of the year against the Mariners. You know, and it came down to a rubber game yesterday. But just the way that they show up, and it feels like it's not necessarily a road game, more like a neutral site, a lot of these places.
Everywhere.
You know in Arizona what it's going to be.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, there's way too many snowbirds out there from Chicago.
As a Sox fan, you know, you are envious of that when it comes to the Cubs, where regardless of where they go. Because you know what it is? I see it with the Bulls, where you watch a Bulls game, and then you can see, you know, the fans in every stadium. And so then you wish it was your team in Major League Baseball, but unfortunately, it just leans towards the Cubs.
Just wait till they get that new
ballpark. Stop it! No, we just talked about this. We just talked about this. What are we watching? What is, like? They're so far away.
The fact
away
that you came back from a peaceful vacation in Mexico
to
watch and said, "I'm going to physically find my remote and turn on this White Sox game."
I told you my wife was dealing with food poisoning. She was sitting on the couch, and then instead of...
You want to make her more sick?
No. Instead of giving up the TV to my kids, which is what I would normally do, I was like, absolutely not. You know what, kids? You're going to go play. and I'm watching the TV, and then it just happened to be what kind of. But the windows, like, there's just so far out, right, from fans showing up, from Sox fans dominating a stadium. Like, when the Sox go to Seattle.
They barely dominate their home stadium. They're not filling it up.
All right, let's go back to the Cubs, bro. No, no. Let's go back to the Cubs.
Why you want to avoid the Sox talk?
Because it's obvious, right? We're beating a dead horse right now. Sox suck. They don't get a lot of fans. Nobody likes them.
Southside!
Exactly.
Stand up!
Nobody's there to stand up.
They've stood up twice in 15 games. They've stood up twice for two wins in 15. The worst 15-game start in the 124 franchise history of the White Sox.
It's not surprising. With this lineup, with this rotation, with this bullpen.
Hey, I'm not going to let you disrespect Garrett Crochet like
stop
that.
Stop it. Because Michael Kopech had a couple good innings, and all of a sudden we're back, baby? No. Terrible rotation. You're lucky Garrett Crochet is there. Lucky. Lucky that he was able to bounce back from injury. Lucky that he's the guy in the present who you thought he was going to be when you trotted him out there is just after getting drafted thinking he was going to be some sort of savior. Oh, the White Sox thinking that someone can help them earlier than they should? What a surprise. Oh, no, it's not, because that's the rest of their roster.
They're on pace to win 23 games, I saw.
Dude, isn't the record 20 games? The record's 20 games. The fact that people are even talking about a team that could potentially, you know, challenge that
lose 140
unreal.
Games. Lose 140 games. Is that bad, 140 losses? That's, you know what, that it's historic, though.
Marshall Harris, CBS 2 Sports Director, asking if it's bad if a team loses 140 games here, ladies and gentlemen.
Listen, I told you before we came on the air, I said, if you didn't laugh, you would cry. So you know what? I'm going to get off all the kikiing over here. That's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to sit here like...
The key's going to turn into wee-wee. Like, it's going to turn into weeping because that's what it is. It's brutal to watch. It's brutal to watch because there's already been multiple years of badness. And so to be here and thinking that the badness was over, like, oh, it can't get worse than
it's
this.
It's only been 2 years of badness.
What?
They were in the playoffs 3 years ago.
Did anyone have any faith in them after losing to getting swept by teams? No. It's bad. They're not as good. Even in those years, they were like the Bulls in the play-in situation. No one expected them
to
make
some sort of deep
run.
They won a game against the Astros. I was there in the playoffs. They didn't get swept.
Okay.
They won game three. You don't remember?
No.
Sunday night game.
Definitely don't remember that.
Guys, you back me up on this. They won a game. They
they're having a different conversation.
I'm looking this up because I just
remember getting wrecked by Houston, getting wrecked, and then just thinking to myself like they're just a better team. And then, no matter what the White Sox do, they're not good enough in the present. And you were hoping that would continue to snowball, and it was like Olaf in the summer. It was just not non-existent. It just didn't happen.
Listen, our hopes for the White Sox.
There's no hope. There's literally no hope.
Wow, you're just really.
No, you over here talking about if you can't laugh, you're going to end up crying. I am like in a mental institute with the jacket on. Like I am watching this. It's bad. I don't want to continue to be in this bad mood.
October 10th, 2021. Got that?
Who's the pitcher on that night? Pitcher of record.
The winning pitcher is still on the White Sox, except for now he closes games
Michael Cope.
Every once in a while when they need a closer. A 12-6 victory over the Houston Astros in Game 3, as I stated.
12. They had to put up 12.
They put up 12.
Oh, God.
Look, not only did they put
Who
up
was their pitcher of record?
Their pitcher of record was Luis Garcia Jr.
Exactly.
And, well.
they were probably trying to set up the rotation for the next series.
You know who had four RBI in that game?
Luis Robert Jr.
And a home run? A three-run bomb?
Oh, Jose Abreu.
No, Leury Garcia.
Instead of Tommy Pham, they might be wanting to look at a little.
Yasmani Grandal hit a 2-run homer.
Stop it! Honestly, this is painful.
Tim Anderson went 3-for-6. Eloy Jimenez.
Now I'm laughing.
2-for-5 with 2 runs driven in. Luis Robert Jr. had a hit. Tim Anderson went 3-for-6. Can we just go back? Remember Tim Anderson, the All-Star? That was Tim Anderson, the All-Star.
Do you remember
Tim
Anderson?
That was the guy who did a walk-off into the night out in Iowa. I was there for that, too.
That was great. Tim Anderson, do you remember when he was up and you just automatically assumed it'd be a base hit?
Yeah. Like, not like a triple or anything, but
no.
Just a single up the middle.
Slap it down hard. That was fun. You got me smiling again.
You see, you just got to – it wasn't that – my point is it wasn't that long ago.
He's Marshall Harris. He's Marshall Harris from CBS. I'm Gabe Ramirez.
We're going to have fun today, okay?
Oh, we're definitely going to have fun. I just don't know how. I can only do maybe like, you know, White Sox in like 2 or 3 minute stints. Anything after that, then it's just I get depressed and.
The fact that you forgot the electricity of that Sunday night game three is just that, you call yourself a White Sox fan. That's the last. That was literally the last gasp for them.
Anybody that's hanging on to a 2020 world or a 2021st round playoff win.
Listen. When you win game three at home and it's a 2-1 series, you're feeling like, okay, we can get this next home game and even this series.
Who's feeling like that?
If you were at the ballpark that night, you would have felt it. 12-6.
Did you feel that way?
Yeah, I was like, oh, okay,
that's
they a very shot.
High. That's an extremely high pitched. Yeah, for that. Anyway, let's go back to these Cubbies, man. And
okay, you make a good point. Yeah. I did, my octave did go up, Mariah right. Carey style. You're right.
Cubs did have a good one yesterday. 3-2. Javier Assad on the bump. 5 2/3. Gave up 4 hits. Only 2 earned runs. Struck out 6. The Cubs rotation. I am envious of the Cubs. Not even the rotation. Just their whole pitching staff. And as
they got guys hurting out here, just we're just gonna throw
that
guys.
Was the case last year. That's they seem to somehow just, I mean, they shouldn't never worry about pitching. And you always hear them worried about the whether it's Hector Neris, whether it's back into the bullpen like Mark Leiter Jr. But you know, Albert Azeley pitching well, he gets the saves, third of the season. And Javier Assad, he's someone where after the World Baseball Classic last year, I just thought to myself, why would this guy not be a mainstay in the rotation? But you know, they bouncing around and here he is 2-0 in the season. But again, the Cubs continue to get just good pitching performances from their staff.
It's great when you can have a guy flame out like Jose Kwas and be like, all right, we've seen enough of this. Just like that quick. And then Keegan Thompson comes up. He's like, I'm going to come up here and strike people out because that's what I do.
What a luxury.
That's like, it's called pitching depth. It's called a farm system. I know it's hard for you to understand what that is watching.
You mean
you
like
watch.
Old McDonald?
Like old McDonald.
Because that's the only farm system I'm familiar with.
Listen,
my teams.
EIEIO.
Yeah.
And look, it's the fact that Justin Steele has made a start, didn't finish the start.
Didn't finish the start.
And look, didn't finish the start. It's the fact that Jameson Taillon is not pitching. And it doesn't matter. It has
that's
not
so
mattered.
Wild. Steele and Taillon out, and they're like,
and
yeah.
They're like, yeah, we're
talking about the Cubs beating good teams in Major League Baseball.
And I'm not gonna lie, I got scared a little bit watching that game, the back end. Like they needed a couple of double plays, they got some hairy situations late. But Albert Azeley, Azeley, depending on who you ask and when you ask, he's gotten the job done as a closer, and he wasn't even supposed to be a closer. When you have guys that step into roles
that want it too,
yeah. That step into roles, when you have players in your organization that can step into roles and have success in roles that you didn't know that they would have success in, as you mentioned, a luxury, but also that's what you need to have if you're going to have a winning organization.
Yeah, I think ultimately when you're looking at a lot of these guys in the Cubs staff, they understand the importance of either role, right? If you're a starter, if you're a closer, and with so many arms, if you can find your way into one or the other, you're stepping up no matter what. And I think that's the beauty of this rotation where these are really good pitchers. And they're not coming up saying, yeah, I want to be a seventh inning, you know, guy. No. I want this or that, and I'm going to pitch well until I can find my way into one of these roles. And Albert is definitely a
good one. Reminding me when, you know, Craig Counsell, his first year as manager, and he was talking about on day one of spring training, because I was out in Arizona, different roles. And, like, we have time to figure that out. And who's going to do what. And that's really what we're here to do in spring training, is to sort it all out. But if you go in the clubhouse and ask the players, to a man, they're describing a team where, hey, I just want to help this team win, like whatever they need me to do. And to hear that and everyone consistently say that and understand, like, hey, last year didn't go like we thought we wanted to go, so whatever is needed to get to where we want to get to, I'm down. That's all you want to hear if you're watching the team play.
Who is leading leading the team in strikeouts right now?
The Cubs? Is it Imanaga?
Mm-mm. Close. Third.
He's third?
I know. Right? Are you kidding me?
Well, he didn't have that many
Don't
strikeouts.
Maybe go back to how the White Sox suck and make me depressed again. He's third. Shota Imanaga's killing, and he's third on the team in strikeouts.
I don't know. Who's
the man who just got off the bump has 18. Second. And they both fall behind Jordan Wicks with 19.
Oh, Jordan Wicks, that's right.
Like, are you kidding
Young
me?
Flamethrower.
That's what I'm saying.
Like, you forgot.
That's why I brought it up. That's, I don't, I, You have no idea how upsetting it is when I talk to Cubs fans and whenever they complain about pitching. And they're just like, oh, no, pitching.
Here's the thing.
Did you watch last season?
You can't get mad at them complaining. Just understand they have a different standard than what you have.
If you can see my face right now. It's true, though, but they do. The front office does, right? And it starts with the front office.
Right.
Ownership. Like, these are our arms. You're moving in. You're moving out. You're not doing well as a starter. Don't trip. We got four other people that we're going to give. You're going to get a spot start. You're going to get a spot start. My scout's been telling me that, you know, he's been playing well. It's an amazing luxury to have, especially when you're bringing in other people. But, like, even if you just look at the pitching staff, I mean, and you're going down the list, everybody that's on the roster currently, I mean, there's no one there that, I mean, I'm sure Cubs fans will be worried about certain players because they probably, again, in the bell curve of their pitching staff, they can find and point to who they think is the worst of the staff. But I bet you every team in Major League Baseball would like whoever would be at the bottom of this rotation and just back into the bullpen.
Well, certainly if Justin Steele's not even pitching in your rotation, you got guys like that you're waiting on. You're good. It's stacked right now.
Yeah.
The Cubs front office has done its job. In terms of saying, hey, we just missed the playoffs. What can we do to make sure we are a playoff contender and in an expanded playoff role next season? Oh, we'll start with the manager and we'll work our way from there.
Yeah, we know we have a good pitching staff. It's about how it's handled. Another thing that I like that Craig Counsell has done is the consistency in the lineup. And, you know, I'm sure we'll talk to, you know, a bunch of people about that. But, you know, players like to know where they're batting. I think last year, you know, one of the biggest knocks on Rossi was the consistently inconsistent lineup that he would be putting together, and that people would be questioning why certain players were in certain positions. And I think, you know, this year people know where they're going to play, people know where they're going to hit, and they're still baseball players. And whether it's little league, high school, major league baseball, men want to know where they're going to be at so they can kind of be in that mindset of playing at the top level.
Were you good with the Ian Happ leadoff, like from just jump this year? Just say,
yeah,
he's gonna be our leadoff hitter
again. I am okay with consistency, and consistency, especially at the beginning of the season, where you can then take a step back, look, and say, okay, now here's where I need to adjust. This is what I thought was the best thing for this roster as a first year manager of the Chicago Cubs. So yeah, I had no problem. You hated it?
No, I wasn't sure. I was like, oh, this is interesting.
Why do you hate Craig Counsell's decision making?
I don't hate.
That was my best Mark Grody right there.
No.
That was my best Mark Grody.
So it's funny because he's led off in 13 of the 15 games that they've played, right? And he's batting .216 in the leadoff role. He's also batting .167 as the first batter of the game. But his on-base percentage in the leadoff hole is .344, which is fine.
That's what you want.
So, like, it's worked out. And plus, they have so many different bats that can do damage. It's not...
Listen, bro.
Some teams have 7, 8, 9 every inning when you look and see who's up. Yes, other teams like, oh, okay, we got some guys who get hit every inning.
All right, so I need to pick me up because that was a depressing first segment for
us. What do you mean? The Cubs are very positive. Bulls, yes. Semi-positive. At least they're playing hard coming down the stretch.
All right. We are going to try to, you know, I think on the other side, I think I'm going to feel a lot better because we're going to be talking about Michael Bush. He makes me happy.
Okay.
We're going to get into some WNBA on the other side as well. The pick six will most certainly happen at the top of the hour. Make sure you're here for it so you can hear the opinions of both I, Gabe Ramirez, and Marshall Harris right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
The score.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
All right, gents, your biggest takeaway from the Masters: Tiger making the cut, then shooting a worst round of his life out at Augusta. Can he get better with all these injuries?
I got to be honest. When I was watching this, and you know, in the airport, you know, they have her playing it over there, and I'm seeing this thing, and then you see the ticker come by and say that Tiger had his, you know, worst round ever with 82. You just say to yourself, man, you make the cut, you're feeling good, body just doesn't hold up. You're older, you've had a ton of injuries, you know, those things,
surgeries,
and it's like you're like, okay, you know, you're wishful, you know, you think back to 2019, you know, you still got good feelings. But ultimately, you know, Father Time is going to catch up with you. And on the opposite end of Father Time is Scheffler, right? 27 years old. To me, you know, what stood out the most is that finding out Jack Nicklaus and Tiger Woods won their third at age 26. Bro, that's crazy. At 26, I know I'm on the other side of 30, but I say to myself, 26, three, and then they're championing over Scheffler. And the way he won it was amazing, right? Didn't have the best start to the round. Comes out, hella birdies to pull away from the pack. So, I mean, to me, the biggest takeaway for me was just the Nicklaus and Tiger Woods winning it at 26, because we're praising Scheffler at 27. But, man, I guess also the LIV guys being in there, too. You know, everybody playing together kind of was good.
They need to get back to that.
I mean, that's what you get the best players when you get, you know, the best competition. And then you get guys like Scheffler being able to stand out, and it makes that win that much more important. But good golf all the way around. I'm glad he ended up doing it, and I'm glad at least we were able to watch a little bit of Tiger.
Yeah, I think it's important to understand what we're watching with Tiger. I mean, I'll admit, I used to openly, after he had his early success, I then was openly rooting against Tiger for a number of reasons. But now that he is back, per se, playing at Augusta, like, I wanted to see him make the cut. I was happy that he made the cut. He broke his rear end to make that cut. And then as bad as he played on Saturday, I wondered when I woke up on Sunday morning, the first thing I was looking for was a withdrawal. I was wondering if he was going, and he did not, and he could have easily withdrew from that tournament. And some people are always going to have an issue but I would have been fine with it. I would have been absolute, because his goal at this point is to play in all the majors this year. That's one of his goals for the rest of the season. And how cool must it have been for the kid that ends up the low amateur to spend 6 hours on
picking his brain,
you know, walking Augusta with Tiger, right? And if you're into the Masters as much as I'm into the Masters, and they always have the ceremonial tee off, and it used to be with Arnold Palmer, no longer with us, but Jack, and you got Gary Player and Tom Watson. Like, I don't want that to be the next thing we see from Tiger Woods at the Masters. Like, that'll make all of us feel really old really quick. So savor this. And as boring as Scottie Scheffler is, he's boring. He is boring.
Wow.
You have to, I'm going to keep going. You have to enjoy the fact. You got to, like, hold on to this 10 years from now when he's maybe putting on his fourth coat. Right? Like, right now it's kind of like, it doesn't do a whole hell of a lot for me. Sunday, totally disappointing. Saturday, the last like 90 minutes to 2 hours of the Masters was awesome. It was awesome theater. It was great. The back nine was fantastic. Moving day is what, you know, they call it. It was up and down, and guys were in, guys were out. Sunday was a total bore. Scheffler literally, there was for about 30 minutes, four guys were tied at -7.
Yeah.
And 30 minutes later, he had a four-shot lead.
I think the biggest takeaway for me was Scottie Scheffler is that dude, because he's not old. He's got two Masters championships now in the last 3 years, and he's been ranked number one for over 80 weeks. He's won three of the last four things he's done, and you got second in the tied. I think tied for second in the other. So when you look at what he's been able to do just in the last month, you're like, okay, this guy is coming. And he calls it boring, but see, when I watch golf on a Sunday, regardless of the tournament. So
I'm asking. I was wondering if you just thought golf in general was boring.
No. I don't think it's boring. Oh. I think either you want that feeling of, okay, these guys are going at it, or someone's just like, I just turn on the afterburners. I'll see y'all later. And that's what Scottie Scheffler did on the back nine. He put together the birdie. Not that anybody else was playing well, but he just said, I'm going to get these birdies out the way, and y'all are just going to watch me. It's a coronation victory parade.
Good luck.
And he's like, I like putting the green jacket on me, not on John Rahm. Someone else, oh, yeah, John, can you put that green jacket back on me? So I like that. With Tiger, this is what it is, bro. He's at seniors the Champions Tour level of play. That's what he is for the rest of his career. And for him to just get to the cut, that was, in my mind, his finish line. And that's why he can only do so much. He had to play, what, 23 holes on one day? It's like he's not built for that anymore, bro. So now it's like, I'm going to go get ready for the next big tournament because that's all he's got left in him.
You know, I've been asked that question before.
That is the voice of Kendall Gill. He'll be with you guys at 8:25. What about the Bulls getting to OT twice in games they did not need? Is that a sign of the Bulls playing hard and Billy Donovan's coaching, or does it really not matter at all until Wednesday when the play-in game starts?
As we all know, the Bulls had already clinched a home game in the play-in. They weren't moving no matter what happened Sunday against the Knicks at Madison Square Garden. But the fact that they did go to Madison Square Garden where something was on the line for the Knicks was impressive in that they put up that fight. Now, I have questions about Billy Donovan playing these guys, four of his starters, 40-plus minutes in a game such as that. I know it went to overtime, but I thought he might option for the rest. I know they don't play again until Wednesday, but it's good to see the Bulls play hard. Gabe made the point earlier, you know, you never know what you're going to get, like a box of chocolates. I don't know what we're going to get against the Hawks, although since the Hawks gave up 157 points to the Pacers, we're going to get offense in that game.
That's for sure.
Now, whether they can beat the loser of the Heat-Sixers game, that's interesting. Maybe DeMar will bring his daughter out, unlike what he did last year if they have to go to Miami. Because last time I checked, Joel Embiid and them have won 8 games in a row. So, yeah, I guess the Bulls are the Bulls, and we'll just enjoy whatever ride they give us, whether it's short or long.
Gosh, Marshall, now I am really actually rooting for a Bulls win and a Heat loss so we could get back to it. Yeah. I forgot all about that until you just brought that up. And that was so much fun. I am surprised by this as well. According to our friends over at Circus Sports Illinois, the Bulls are a 3-point favorite Wednesday night. 3-point favorite.
The Hawks can't stop anybody. They couldn't stop us four.
But it should be like 1.5.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree with you, Gabe. I was thinking like 1, 1.5. Right. 3? Wow. I appreciate the try hard. I appreciate the go out there and play. I got to really think about Billy Donovan. He said, I played the cut in the pregame show, talking about there's a lot of money not on the court right now. A lot of money not on the court right now in the Bulls. Like a lot of money they've
yeah, exactly. Lonzo Ball. Yeah.
Right? And look at the East. Like the Knicks needed that game yesterday. They needed that game to finish second. So, and you know Thibs wanted that game. And the Bulls were able to hang with them. A game that I think the Knicks were favored by 12. So the Bulls, though, we talk about this minutes thing. The Bulls took Friday off. Like, they all took Friday off.
Right.
So that was their rest. These are highly paid, unbelievable physical specimen athletes. They are so fit, it's ridiculous. So I think they will be just fine. As soon as you play them, I think you play them. I don't know that giving them the quarter off, like, let's, you know, play 3 quarters and then sit down. That's going to make a difference? I don't think so. So I actually think this worked out perfect. Now, if their tongues are dragging on the court on Wednesday afternoon, we can revisit this. But I don't think they will be because, again, it's now one and done. It's survive in advance. That's kind of what I like about this play-in tournament. It's got a little March Madness feel to it in April, right? The one and done, survive in advance. I like the Bulls' chance on Wednesday night. I like the fact that they tried really hard.
Love the Bulls' chances on Wednesday against Atlanta. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, the fact of the matter is this, Marshall, you know, this last game against the Knicks, Alex Caruso wants to be on the floor. You know, he's like, prime time.
He made big Sunday plays in overtime that made it a one-possession game.
That's what I'm saying. He's a dog. He wants to be out there. He understands that his value is predicated on how well he performs for the Chicago Bulls and understands that being on a national level, Bulls aren't going to have too many games in the playoffs where they're going to be seen. So he wants to be out there. But, I mean, look, Kobe White, 18 shots. Vooch, 19 shots. DeMar, 24 shots. I mean, they were out there playing, right? When you're looking at the bench, nobody really contributed in that. Javon Carter.
He only played eight guys.
That's what I'm saying. So the rotation was tight, and that's just it. Also, who else is he going to put in? Adam Sanogo again to put up 22 and 20 or something like that? Like, the guys in the bench, it wouldn't be respectful to the game, especially when you have a team like the Knicks that are ready to play. Milwaukee, they said they're not going to play their guys. That was, you know, they dealt with their own end on that side. The Bulls had to come out. And then the Bulls ultimately do want to win that play-in situation. They do want to face the Boston Celtics in round one if they can. And I think they all are shooting for that because, going back to my original point, they all want to be playing on national television and, you know, trying to slay the Giant for a game, not the whole series.
It's an interesting question, I think.
Voice of Craig Council, Cubs had an interesting weekend out in Seattle. They are now in Arizona. The game tonight on the score. Shota Imanaga, his performance Saturday night in Seattle was pretty good, even without that strikeout pitch. How good is this guy?
It's unreal, you know, because if you watch baseball enough, you say to yourself, oh, a new guy comes in that people haven't seen. He's going to have the upper hand for the first month, 2 months of the season. People then get an opportunity to, you know, see him for a second time, a lot more tape on him. But you still got to come out in the beginning of the season and pitch well against some of the best teams in baseball and prove your worth. And he's done that. This could have gone different. Yamamoto, right? From the Dodgers. His first outing wasn't this.
Against the Padres, they lit him up.
Do you see what I'm saying?
You woke up and you're like, oh.
And had that been the case for Imanaga, most people would have been like, oh, no. Is this going to – what? Steele just went down. Imanaga's not pitching. It would – the exact opposite. It's a guy that you want to love that is giving you a reason to love him, whether it's the passion behind it. I mean, obviously, you know, people are talking at length about, you know, his intro song, what his press conferences look like. He is very likable. But you become much more likable when you are on the mound and you are giving your team your best effort against some of the best teams in the bigs. And so I hope his progress continues. I hope that, you know, people obviously were concerned about, you know, pitching every 5 days in the bigs. And obviously, you know, that's not going to come into play in terms of wear and tear until a couple months in. So I hope those things continue to operate at a high level. But in the present, what he's done so far, more than anything you could have asked for if you're a Cubs fan.
He has been fabulous. Really curious to see how he was going to pitch on the road, right? Got the first starts at Wrigley. All the way into the sixth inning until he had given up his first walk, and then he walks guys back to back. They totally jinxed it on the TV broadcast. They totally jinxed it on the broadcast, talking about how he hadn't walked anybody. And boy, talk about putting the coffee on or standing up to watch games. I mean, for this shift, two late games, Friday and Saturday. I have to say again though, like the Apple TV broadcast, like the picture is so good, it's crazy. I mean, whatever they're using, 5K, 1080.
Reminds you of the first time you were watching HD.
Right. I mean, it's unbelievable how crystal clear that picture is. But, yeah, he has been everything you could have hoped for, and at this point, more.
I think I didn't have, like, high expectations. Like, oh, there's going to be an adjustment period. He's got to do this. He's got to do that. But, listen, that first game? The 9 strikeouts and 6 innings and 2 hits, he was so dominant. And I was like, ah, it's the Rockies, right? But you can't argue with what he's done against the Dodgers and now the Mariners. Like, those are two teams that have playoff aspirations and then some. So to see him, and you mentioned the walks, I was like, through his second start, which of course was cut short by rain because they had the rain delay, I was like, this dude struck out 12 guys and hasn't walked anyone? Oh, he's that dude. And not only that, it was the fact that he gave up 2 hits in each of those starts. It's like he wasn't giving up like 5 or 6 hits. He wasn't, you know, sometimes you see a guy throw 7 innings and gives up 10, 11 hits. He's like, nah, y'all just going to stay off these base paths. I'm not going to walk you. You're not going to hit much. And so, like, for him to give up 7 base runners in the Seattle win, I was like, oh, so he is human. But it's fine because if you look at the Cubs, they're, what, 9-6 on the season? Mm-hmm. This dude's pitched 3 times, and they've got wins in all 3 of those games. And at the end of the day, if your pitcher gives you a chance to win like that every single time out, you're going to be good with that. So when I say, how good is he? I don't know, but good enough for me.
Pick 6.
Could the Michael Bush trade be the biggest of the Cubs this offseason?
Yeah. I think when it happened, I was like, oh, I like this trade. It's low risk, high reward, because if this guy really was being held back because there was just nowhere to put him on the Dodgers, why would you not give him a run and see if he can fit in with your club? It seemed like a very smart, prudent baseball move, and it just paid off. Now, I know it's early. He's a rookie who did get a good taste of the big leagues last year in his time with the Dodgers. But to homer in 4 straight games this early in the season, also to have five home runs, which lead the team in home runs, already have 11 RBIs. It looks great, and Craig Counsell's played him well, and you look at between him and Cooper, like the production they've gotten from those two guys, can't argue that. I think overall it's just been kind of emblematic of the team as a whole and their approach at the plate and the fact that they haven't struck out that much, they get hits, and they walk a ton. And in that lineup, he's been in a position to succeed. We always talk about putting players in a position to win. He's been put in that position so far by the Cubs, and you just want to see how well can it go. Maybe a little early to talk about Rookie of the Year, but hey, he's giving me Kevin Moss vibes. And y'all know what that is. That's the dude who's just hitting home runs every other time up at the plate over a stretch of time to make you say he's a threat.
Well, we could get into this a little later, and this will also goes to the topic of our last question, Shota Imanaga, okay? Michael Bush is not a rookie. He is not a rookie. He shouldn't be up for Rookie of the Year. The statistic, here's a statistic from the Cubs last night on their Twitter. Here's a list of Cubs rookies with a home run in four consecutive games since 1901. Michael Bush. Mm. Okay, he's not a rookie. Okay, a rookie is a guy who's making his debut in Major League Baseball. He is not making his debut in Major League Baseball, as you just said, Marshall. He's played a bunch last year with the Dodgers. I'm thrilled about it. The only thing I don't like is that right now, this past couple of days, it's been living and dying by the home run ball. You know, Saturday night, they get a win. They got three hits. They got three solo home runs. That was enough. So living and dying by the long ball. They started out with such great at-bats, such great approach. All of it, Ian Happ, I don't know, you know, Mr. Coffee, thought he'd love Seattle. Can't wait to get out of Seattle, right? I mean, he had an awful trip to Seattle. So really, really happy with Michael Bush, but let's not get into the Rookie of the Year because he ain't no rookie.
Yeah, hopefully. I agree with that, by the way.
I'm just going with what Major League Baseball says.
And I understand, but it has an icky feeling attached to it. And that's so I agree with
Shota
Dustin.
Shota is a good argument, too.
Yeah.
Because he's a seasoned vet in Japan, and now he's playing in Major League Baseball. Yeah. I don't know that he's a rookie either. But they're both probably Rookie of the Year candidates.
Doesn't have, you know, rookie nerves the same way as a young man will coming into the bigs and playing for that first
time. So a journeyman can't be a rookie. Like, if you're like a G League player in the NBA, or you played in the Arena Football League for a couple of years, like, wait. Is that what we're doing?
But let's go back to the original one, because you're saying it as if a G League player then got brought up to the NBA, went back down, then another NBA team picks him up, and then he plays, and then now he's a newcomer.
Michael Bush thing. I'm using the specific Major League Baseball rules. You guys know, what is it, 45, 50 innings pitched for a pitcher? Like, it's always been this way. If y'all want to change that's cool.
Yeah, I think that's what we're arguing against.
Gabe and I
want
to start a petition.
Yeah,
that's okay, y'all start that petition. In the meantime, I'm going to go with the rules.
Well, good thing is this. They haven't changed yet, so Michael Bush probably will be in that conversation. I mean, outside of the four home runs in four straight games, I mean, hits in nine out of his last 10 games. Batting seven for his last 14. I mean, that in itself is impressive outside of the home runs. But again, somebody in the text line just sent it in and said that Bush was one of the guys that the White Sox did not want.
Don't do that.
And for the Dylan Cease trade with
the
Dodgers.
You're making a whole fan base.
I wanted to say, because I wanted to just throw in the White Sox, they think they have Andrew Vaughn and Gavin Sheets, so they would then want to bring in a Michael Bush. But clearly he is the productivity level that they need because of what he's been able to do. You know, I love what he said when he faced the Dodgers, and he was like, hey, man, I got no ill will towards them, no animosity. I'm out here just trying to play ball. And he's showing it day in and day out. I mean, he's just having a hell of a run to start the season off. And I just hope, you know, because back to Dustin's point about the way they've been winning lately, you know, good teams, they got to find different ways to win throughout the season. I'm hoping that's just a window for the Cubs. This is how they're winning in the present. Bats come alive, and then they can marry all of it, you know, as the season progresses. Because it'll be good. It'll be cool to see Michael Bush be able to come through with a long ball when the top of the lineup is coming through and getting on base. And then that then propels the Cubs to a whole nother level.
That's a wonderful question. I will take some time with it.
That's the voice of Steve Stone. He'll be talking to you guys about the Sox at 9 o'clock. The White Sox are the worst team in baseball, and they even lost on Saturday afternoon with their one shining star, at least it looked that way for a couple of starts, Garrett Crochet. Is there any reason to even watch?
Yeah, I mean, Ely De La Cruz is a hell of a player. So, I mean, maybe you just want to see what he's doing. Or maybe what the Sox could look like in 4 or 5 years from now if they were to get
four
this thing right.
Years.
I told you Listen, we like to think as fans that windows are a lot smaller or tighter than they are, but the fact of the matter is it gets dragged out. The Reds are experiencing in the present. The White Sox see how far away from that they are. I mean, Garrett Crochet is a great story, but just the Whites, I concede my time to the rest of the people.
Well, I think what's interesting about that is your answer there, Gabe. You bring up Ellie De La Cruz, right? So here's why it's worth going down there. I still think, considering for me, going to a Cubs game or going to a Sox game, harder to get to a Cubs game, harder to park at a Cubs game, easier to get to, easier to park. I love the idea that you can tailgate at a Sox game. So if you get a day like you had Saturday, what a great day, or yesterday, what a great day to tailgate. If you want to see some of the best players in baseball.
For cheap.
I mean, buy the cheapest ticket and go sit wherever you want except for scout seats.
$5 hot dogs, $5 beers on Tuesday.
Right. I'm just saying. I mean, I'm just,
they're running all the
see,
promos.
But see the best players in town. Yes. You know, let your kids see the best players in person over at 35th and Shields, because it's harder to do. Listen, there's nothing like a Cubs game. I could sit in Wrigley Field and just look at the grass. Right? I mean, seriously.
I believe it.
Like, I mean, I could just sit there and look at the grass. I mean, that's why I host the Fly the W 670 podcast. Hey. But that's the reason to go to a game at 35th and Shields right now, is to see the stars of other teams. Unfortunately, Ellie De La Cruz on Saturday didn't do anything. Right? Friday he did. Saturday he didn't do anything. So that you would have been disappointed.
That's but lefty-lefty matchup.
That's why. I mean, it was a gorgeous weekend. Sox, it seemed like last year, every time we had a decent weekend in Chicago, the Cubs were at home. Every time it rained in Chicago, the Sox were at home. So the weatherman didn't like the Sox last year. The weatherman liked the Sox this weekend.
God.
See, y'all say stuff like that with like the LA
Cruz. Don't spend the first half hour of the show crapping on our.
No. Listen to what I'm saying. Yeah. Ellie De La Cruz didn't do anything on Saturday. You know why? Because Garrett Crochet was on the mound. Even though he's giving up runs, he did strike out 10 people. Let's look at the facts. Who leads the American League in strikeouts? Garrett Crochet. Like, there's reasons to go see the White Sox play.
Reason. That's singular. Is he
a rookie of the year?
No, because he's pitched a bunch of years.
He had enough innings.
I just wanted to know. Maybe he's a first time starter of the year. I don't know. I think yes. There's reason to watch. My primary reason, I didn't know if this was is there a reason to watch for everyone or is there a reason for me to watch? Because you know my reason to watch. I get paid to watch, so I'm good with that.
Yeah.
So I think for fans, you just have to understand that rebuilds happen. Some teams rebuild, some teams reload.
Brandon, play the little ding sound so we can move on from this one.
And the chamber is empty for the White Sox right now, okay? So you have to wait for them to rebuild. Okay, because there's no reloading. There's no bullets in the cabinet. There's no bullets out back. So that's where we are with the White Sox.
I'm taking Paige. Next question.
What did you think of Caitlin Clark's performance on SNL?
And obviously, I can't tell jokes like you do.
Thank you for that.
But I did write some jokes, and it would mean a lot to me if you read some of them. Just right over there on the cards.
Well. The Indiana Fever have the first pick in this Monday's draft. A reminder that Indiana Fever is a WNBA team and not what Michael Che gave to dozens of women at Purdue University.
That's great.
Wow.
I enjoyed that segment
this morning
so much.
On the Mully and Haas show.
Yeah, listen. I really enjoyed it.
Will you be following the WNBA draft, which is tonight? Should the Sky take the best players or the best personalities?
Some would argue you could do both. Like, why settle? Angel Reese is out there. Should be in that after the top five picks range. They've got the third pick. And now the seventh pick, because that front office is like, James Wade, in your honor of your memory, we're going to go ahead and build back up our whole team. Because what James Wade did is one of the dirtiest things I've ever seen in professional sports. The man was a decent coach. He happened to get Candace Parker to come back to her hometown, which wasn't really of his doing per se. And they won a championship. But after that, he was like, let me catch the whatever. And it did not work out. I'm interested to see. I'm very excited for the WNBA draft. Maybe more so than other people. Maybe other people are also excited. Yes, we know Caitlin Clark is going to go one to Indiana. Hopefully she's just as productive as she was in college and just as funny as she was on Saturday Night Live. But I really am crossing my fingers that the Sky do not mess this up after giving up all the stuff they gave up to get there. Kalia Copper, who's great, they couldn't build around her. Nobody wanted to come play with her in Chicago. So now I'm just like, please get the right players. Cardoso is a must at number three.
Didn't they also, they made a trade, right, over the weekend? Or
yeah, they went
Friday?
Up from 8-7.
8-7, yeah. I mean, why not the same, right? I mean, Angel Reese would bring a lot of eyes, and she's obviously super talented.
Yes.
So why not? I mean, you know, I am interested for sure. I'm actually interested, like, and you guys might know the answer to this, and I should, considering what I do. Is this like ESPN going to have like pomp and circumstance? Is this going
to
be like...
Oh, yeah, it's smart to piggyback
off of the success of the tournament.
You know what I mean? Are they going to have like a big to-do tonight? Will there be a first-round show? And
yeah, there's a draft. There's been a draft show, just more people are aware of it now that Caitlin Clark is the number one pick. I watch the WM draft every year. I will tune in tonight.
I will tune in. I'm curious to see how it all goes. So
short draft, Justin. You don't just do it. It's 12 teams.
I don't have to worry about them cutting anything off in the middle of it.
Oh, no. Low blow there. I like that, though. We'll talk about that a little later. Yeah, I mean, first, let me go back to Caitlin Clark's performance on SNL. It was really cool that, you know, they brought her out. It was something that was in the works since the tournament. They knew she'd be in New York for the draft, so they tried to marry the thing. She said she got the script day of, which I thought was really cool to try to learn it there. And then they even offered her the opportunity to bring her teammates on stage at the very end of the SNL performance, which that was awesome. If there's any place to put Caitlin Clark on SNL, it is in Weekend Update.
It is.
And did you see how she gets on? Michael Che is making a joke about Caitlin Clark, and he's like, in true Weekend Update fashion, he's like, and here to comment on Caitlin Clark is... Caitlin
and
Clark.
I thought it was going to be like somebody playing Caitlin Clark, but no, it was Caitlin Clark.
Right. That was the best part about it. So I thought she did a phenomenal job and being given the ability to highlight women's basketball and some of the icons that have played there. So most certainly, I think a lot of America will be watching tonight, not only to just, you know, see Caitlin Clark walk across the stage, but to find out where some of these other players that were big names in the tournament,
I'm mad
where
Paige
they
Beckers
end
is
up.
Staying because that could have been the Sky. They could have had Paige Beckers.
Would have been nice. I mean, people speak extremely highly of her, including Dawn Staley. So I'll be watching. I know a lot of people will. And it'll be interesting to see how the Sky shake up their team, because it'll be cool if the Winchester Arena could be packed over the summer watching someone like Cardoso and Angel Reese. All right, it is Gabe Ramirez and Marshall Harris filling in for Mully and Hall today. But we will continue with the extra point on the other side. Brad Biggs, our guy, did a mock draft, and he has something unique happening to the Chicago Bears. What is that, and what do Marshall and I have to say about it? We'll do that on the other side. It's Gabe. It's Marshall. It's 670. The score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Haw on 670. The score.
Our guy Brad Biggs did his third mock and has the Bears trading out of the number 9 pick. Biggs left 2 of the top 3 wide receivers on the board. Would you do that?
I think initially I would love to have seen what Biggsy said was the compensation for that number 9 pick. Am I going down to 10 so I can grab one of the other two that are still remaining on the board? And is it a second round pick, a future first? What am I getting there? That would be interesting to help me sway my opinion. I think when you get to number 9, if either of those two wide receivers are still left, in my opinion, I think you take them. It's just too big, too good to pass up. Malik Nabers, I just can't envision a scenario where he's available. Roma Dunze, I've talked to several draft experts on my show at night. Make sure you check me out, 6 p.m. here on The Score. And all of them have said that, you know, Roma Dunze is a Ja'Marr Chase kind of a guy. So, I mean, I have no problem with that. Trading down, I get it. I get it. But what are we trading down for? An offensive tackle? Who do they have him picking up? Dustin, did you see that?
I did not.
Okay. And so, I mean, is it because you want, you know, the best or one of the best edge rushers that are out there? I understand that. A Caleb Williams, one of the best edge rushers and more draft capital. I think Ryan Poles has said it several times that he is completely comfortable with the draft capital he has remaining. But he also said it would be very boring if he just kept it that way. So for me, again, I love the idea. I would just love some hefty compensation for that. But again, but if the question is simply, would you leave them two on the board to trade down? My answer would be no. Give me Ja'Marr Chase, baby Ja'Marr Chase, a.k.a. Roma Dunze. Put him with Keenan Allen, DJ Moore, and let Caleb Williams have options, you know, unlike some of the other quarterbacks for the Bears have had over the last couple of years.
All right, so Biggs has them down at 11 in a trade with the Cardinals from the Vikings, taking the offensive tackle out of the University of Washington. So, I mean, here, if you, there's no way, with all due respect to Brad, if Neighbors and Odunze are, I mean, if Neighbors is on the board, I take Neighbors ahead of Odunze.
Yeah.
Some people, we just heard a promo clip from Booger, I love saying Booger, Booger McFarland, talking about how Neighbors might be the best.
He's baby Tyreek Hill.
Best wide receiver in this draft.
Right.
So if Neighbors is there, I understand you got to protect the quarterback, but like
weapons.
This is 1 year of the wide receiver from the Chargers.
What good is a, what good is a 5 second pocket if I can just throw a slant route to Malik Neighbors in 0.5?
Exactly. So I just, you know, it's it, now again, I haven't dug deep enough. I don't know if there's like a future one or, you know, I don't know the whole thing, but I just can't like. I'd be really bummed out walking in here Friday, 2 weeks, less than 2 weeks from now, and the Bears have taken an offensive tackle out of the University of Washington.
Yes.
At the 11th pick. Not at like the 15th pick, at the 11th pick. You know, and at that point, then I'm like, why in the hell aren't they going pass rusher if we're going that route? If I'm going down, I'm not going down for a tackle.
I think for me, and I'm still looking for pass rushers. Like I understand what the problems were with this team last offseason. They got out of the offseason, they're like, no one can still put pressure on the quarterback. Last I checked, in this particular sport and this particular league, that's something you might want to do. So if they're trading down and getting that close of compensation, 9 down to 11, and they're getting a top draft pick and maybe a player that can help them, I'm with that, but I don't know that that's going to be the case. My whole thing is 4 picks is not enough. I'm pretty resolute in that. Like you, whether they use something else to trade back into earlier, and we know the bottom of this draft is not supposed to be any good.
Right.
So you're going to need premium stuff this year, and if the goal is to win this year, somebody's got to get pressure on the quarterback. I know there's still guys out there that can help them in the free agent market, but if you can make something happen where you can get some help, whether it's through the draft or otherwise, getting pressure on the quarterback, I'm valuing that in my mind over a wide receiver, unless, hey, if 2 of the 3 are there and one of those guys might still be there at 11, that's a different story.
Especially at that trade down point, right, Marshall, where it's like you're looking at the holes for the Chicago Bears.
Right.
Not where you want improvement, holes. And if you're going to trade down, it's probably in your best interest to fill a hole as opposed to add another tackle, add another wide receiver in those instances. But again, it's about that compensation, what it could look like. But it's going to be fun.
I
can't wait.
I'll say this.
I know you're going to be there.
Yeah. I'll be in Detroit next week.
Right?
That's next week, right? Yeah.
Next 25th.
Week. Yeah.
I can't even get my schedule down. I'm leaving Tuesday, come back Friday. But
a
yes.
Week from so I guess we'll probably be talking to you. So just a little bit more. So the Bears would get a 3rd-round selection.
Mm-mm.
No way.
No way.
See,
no,
that in this draft, what we've heard about the depth of quality in this draft, it's hard for me to sign on with that.
Second, maybe. Third?
Yeah,
no.
Yeah. The top 2 rounds is where you're going to strike and get something of value. But again, I'm just really concerned about being able to get pressure on the quarterback because even though the defense is much improved back end of last year compared to the beginning of last year after they made the trade and everything else, you need depth there. Yeah. You got to have guys who can make things happen.
All right, what would you do? 312-644-6767. The opportunity presents itself to you as the GM. 2 of the top 3 wide receivers are still available at 9. Would you trade back for that 3rd-round pick? And if you did, what position would you be addressing for the Chicago Bears? We'll take your calls after the break. 312-644-6767. It's Gabe Ramirez and Marshall Harris filling in for Mully and Hall right here on The Score.
I love saying Booger.
Morning, boys. What's going on?
Mully and Haw, the remix. Gabe Ramirez, Marshall Harris, CBS 2 Sports Director, filling in today. And draft coverage on The Score is presented by ChevyDriveChicago.com and the #1 draft pick, Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. We were mentioning it before the break. Brad Biggs put out his most recent mock draft, and he has the Bears trading down from 9, leaving 2 of the top 3 wide receivers on the board. And the question we asked you was, would you do that in that situation? The compensation looks like it's a 3rd-round pick. And Marshall, I mean, when you're looking at that, the Bears need, especially with this team and the iteration that it's in, impact blue chip players, and they can get that at 1-9. So the idea of trading down only becomes tantalizing if the compensation is good enough. And in this case, do you think it is? In this particular,
well, the third round, I pause it unless they know something. Clearly they know more than I know, right?
Who
the Bears? Okay. The front office.
Yes.
So, I think my gut says trust Ryan Poles because he's been good with the draft specifically. On other things, he hasn't been as good with, like some of the signings, trading for players. I mean, you can kind of go
here
through.
Here we're going. You're picking up what you're putting down.
So, yes, but no, because I would want premium talent. Although I don't think four picks is enough. So I get the.
But I don't want him to be like the Patriots and to just make trades just to make trades.
Oh, no, never that.
You know, like I'm
never
moving that. Down from 9 to 11, then 11 to 20, and then 20 to just to be picking up, you know, fifth round picks.
I like what they did with Darnell Wright. I was okay with that, right?
Okay.
And fourth so rounder. You need guys to protect the quarterback. I get that. But again, they got to get pressure on the quarterback. And maybe they can scheme it up, but there's a lot of good quarterbacks in this league. And if you want to do anything of substance in this league, you're going to have to put pressure on the quarterback.
Especially with the uncertainty up the middle, right? You're still not sure if Dexter and Pickens are going to be guys that are going to contribute in year two the way that you want them to. There's still an unknown there.
Yeah, the learning curve was real in year one.
Yeah. Let's go out to the phone lines, 312-644-6767. Let's go to Fred on the road. Fred, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks a lot. Yeah, I would keep that ninth overall pick. It's just ridiculous that we're even talking about this. You get a blue-chip wide receiver, and you build your depth through free agency. I mean, what free agent out there is not as good as a third-rounder? You know, we're talking like third-round, fourth-round, whatever we're picking up, 2-3 extra picks for that ninth pick. Can we not get some mediocre backup for the mediocre third, fourth, fifth rounder?
Fred, let me ask you this, Fred. Fred, let me first lower your radio for a second. But check it out. What do you think, or how comfortable are you with the amount of draft capital the Bears have left?
Hey, like I said, I believe that the ninth pick we should keep, and the draft capital only having two more picks after that, I believe that we should just grab those in free agency. I thought we had a world of money, and
okay, I got you. Thanks for the call, Fred. I got you, Fred. I got you, Brandon. Look, yeah, I try to tell people all the time, Marshall. You know, I've been doing this radio thing a long time. The last thing you want to do is listen to yourself, because then you sound like you're slow. Because you're like, I'm
talking.
Right.
Listen, you know, in television we have IFBs, interruptible feedback.
Yes.
And this thing is called mix minus. And if the mix minus is on, you're literally hearing yourself on a slight delay, and you're talking through it, but hearing yourself, and it makes you talk like this until you just learn to run through the stop sign, and then you can talk normal, and you just have to ignore the fact that somebody's in your ear, and that person is you.
I sang the national anthem at Soldier Field twice.
And you had the?
And No.
Oh.
But the feedback from the thing.
So, if you don't have earplugs in.
So you have the delay and like trying to sing on key while you're.
Back up. You sang the national anthem at Soldier Field?
Twice.
I didn't know you had pipes.
I used to be in a singing group. Holler at me.
What was your name of your singing group?
No one will ever know. But yeah, I've had songs played on B96, GCI, B92.
I know.
Okay. Do you know?
Please share with the people.
I found out. I got some. I ain't going to spill your beans.
You know somebody?
I know somebody that know you singing.
I know somebody that.
312-644-6767. Gabe Ramirez, Marshall Harris, filling in for Mully and Hall.
Audio of you singing the national anthem.
We got to have, like, this is ridiculous.
It wasn't a Bears game.
Oh.
See, it's how you position things. It was
at Soldier Field.
Twice at Soldier Field. Really big soccer matches. Two really big soccer matches. Not for the Chicago Fire. This was years ago. Anyway.
Gabe, people are curious about you.
Hold on. You also sang the seventh inning stretch.
I did.
Root for the.
You did not hear my voice right there.
Don't win, it's a shame.
Oh, there you are.
You got to hear the ending, though. Watch.
Two, three.
racetracks are out at the old ball game.
It's not my voice. I didn't have a microphone. Pat and Zach Zayman had the mics. I was just in the middle, kind of singing loudly, as loud as I possibly could.
They let you sing the national anthem? Singing like that?
Okay, Marshall, I see where you're going there. Let's go back to the phone.
Wayne Messmer over here.
Yeah. Let's go to Greg out in Romeoville. Greg, welcome to the show. Thoughts on the Bears and Brad Biggs' most recent mock draft?
Yeah, good morning, guys. I hear what you're saying. 4 picks not enough, but don't they actually have 6 picks and they just traded 2 of them away for like one for Keenan and one for some other guy?
Yeah, I don't think anyone's necessarily saying it's not enough. I think that people are wondering what that could potentially look like. Like, are you satisfied with that, right? Are you satisfied with that whole umbrella of picks and trades that has come in? And I think most people are.
I'm just greedy. I'll be honest. I'm the greedy one. And you're right. They did turn those picks into assets that will help them in 2024 and possibly beyond.
Yeah. Let's go to take one more. Let's go to Don on the west side. Don, if those two wide receivers on the board at number 9, what are you doing?
I'm taking one of the wide receivers because, to me, who are you targeting in the third round? I think that'll give you 2 third-round picks, maybe a higher one would have been the Arizona Cardinals pick. So my thing is, like, who are you targeting in the third round that will force you to pass up 2 blue-chip wide receivers at number 9? Now, to me, it is a useless move, a wasted move.
I hear what he's saying because I think that's a bigger discussion to be had about the third round. Because, you know, number 75, you're still getting a good talent, right? 75th best player in college football. But no one's necessarily talking about what that need could look like or what should be addressed.
I think the bigger thing is it's how you view these receivers. If you view them as guys who are game changers, like you said, Jamar Chase, we know what Jamar Chase has done in the NFL. Tyreek Hill, we know what he's done in the NFL. Getting those guys, and if they're as good as you think they are, on rookie contracts and seeing what Caleb Williams can do with them. Like you said, Keenan Allen, you don't know he's going to be here more than 1 year. I think these are all good problems to have, if you will, because the Bears' offense is, I'm very much convinced the Bears' offense is going to be better next year. No matter how you slice it up, chop it up, dice it up, you know.
Most certainly it's going
like
to be
like the hash
better.
Browns at Waffle House. No matter how you order them, it's going to be delicious.
Extra crispy. All right, we will continue our draft conversation in just a little bit. David Syverston from Our Lads is going to join us. And maybe he could shed some light not only on the value of those two receivers, Marshall, but what talent, like what position is there going to be the most talent at come the 75th pick in the draft? Where are the Bears going to be able to have their best choice from? All right, David Syverston from Our Lads joins us next. Again, it's Gabe Ramirez and Marshall Harris filling in for Mullion Hall right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.